Ask most people in Las Cruces, New Mexico, what the most traumatic crime of the last few decades is, and many will recount the violent incident at the Las Cruces Bowl bowling alley on February 10, 1990. The execution of four people and the wounding of three remains one of the state's most violent crimes, and to this day, the perpetrators and motives remain elusive. The local theatrical re-release of a 2010 film hopes to bring attention and leads to the unsolved case. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The film, A Nightmare in Las Cruces, was directed by Charlie Minn and recounts the tragic facts and lingering impact of the Las Cruces Bowl massacre. Charlie Minn is in the studio today to discuss the film and his approach to filmmaking. Welcome, Charlie.
Good to see you again, Charles.
It's nice to have you back. We should mention that this tragic event has an anniversary in 2 days on Monday. It will be the 24th anniversary since this incredibly violent crime. But you're bringing the film back in theaters. It opened last night. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the police wanted me to re-release the film, and the victims' families are very much on board. Mm-hmm. We need new clues to this case. It's gotten very, very old and cold, as they would say. And here we are again. It stinks that we're here another year talking about a case that's unsolved. And 24 years on Monday, that's 24 years too long.
And this weekend, you will be at the screenings at Motwood 7. Is that right?
Yes, I'll be there for all the shows. And Anthony Tadon will be joining me, too. Anthony lost his brother and his two nieces in the brutal attack.
Well, I want you to back us up because some of the listeners may not remember this. It was back in 1990, and maybe a number of listeners weren't actually in the area in 1990. But if you could just briefly recount for us what happened that morning of February 10th, 1990. In Las Cruces.
Yeah, at about 8:20 or 8:30 in the morning, on a Saturday morning before the bowling alley even opened, two killers walked into the bowling alley and shot seven people in the back of the head inside an office. Four were children, ages 2, 6, 12, and 13. Four people died on scene that day, and a fifth one died in 1999. So mm-hmm. There are two survivors right now as we speak. And there's no justice tagged to this case, incredibly. It's just amazing to me that there has never been a single arrest. All we have is composites. And it's such a tough case because when you look at the composites, all the label says is older and younger. Hmm. That's all they're going by. Mm-hmm. I mean, how horrific is this? How horrendous is this?
And these were sketches made after the fact from witness descriptions, the surviving victims.
Yes, mainly the 12-year-old girl who makes the 911 call that's in the movie.
Yeah.
And she's a hero to me. I've offered to fly her to El Paso every year for the anniversary, and she wants no part of this. With that said, I'm fortunate that she even took part in the movie. And she's one of many gut-wrenching interviews. I would say that's the best way for me to describe many of the interviews, if not all of them. Absolutely gut-wrenching.
I think the most haunting thing for me, and it comes across in all of the interviews you do, is that there really isn't even a rationale for why this happened yet. People just cannot get their heads around why these two men came in and shot these seven people.
Something doesn't sit right with this one. A lot of people believe this came out of Juarez. Everything points to a Juarez hit, shooting everybody, shooting everyone in the head, getting rid of eyewitnesses, mm-hmm. trying to just clean house and get rid of everybody. And the fact that it's not solved also points to a Juarez situation because 95% of the murders in Juarez are not even investigated. Mm-hmm. So if this is something Juarez-related, perhaps that's another factor.
Were you living in the area in 1990? Or did you hear about this later on, this case?
I was living in Boston, and I saw it on Unsolved Mysteries, the power of that show.
Yeah, the national
Robert
TV
Stack.
Show.
Yeah, and I remember it was the last 5 minutes of the hour, too, and boy, did they wait till the end to hit people over the head. It was like 5 minutes left. You're not expecting anything, and then bang, all of a sudden this comes up. And they put a crew into Las Cruces very quickly because of how horrible this crime was, and I'm sure they had to push back some of the stories that perhaps were not as serious. So it aired the summer of 1990. This happened in the winter of 1990. So that's a pretty quick turnaround for a show like Unsolved Mysteries because so many people want their case on that show.
Right. Unfortunately, we live in an age where sort of senseless mass killings has become almost a monthly occurrence on television. There's reports almost monthly of something horrific like this. But in 1990,
right,
there was not a lot of context for something as senseless as this. And I think in you make the point in the film that in Las Cruces, you know, their murder rate annually was zero or one.
Yeah.
And here you have seven people, attempted execution, four of them actually died.
In a matter of 10 minutes, the city changed forever. One of the first major mass shootings back in 1990. The first real big one I recall was 84 McDonald's in San Ysidro, which is right by San Diego. But this one, just no one could see this one coming.
Your film begins with the 911 call, which is really powerful, this 12-year-old girl calling the police to tell them what's happened. And she herself at the time had been wounded and
shot five times
and in the head. And is describing the scene. And the film itself is a mix of archival footage and interviews with victims, family, friends, detectives. I'm curious, you also include reenactments. I think from a documentary point of view, that's an interesting decision that a lot of filmmakers have grappled with, when to reenact historical moments and when not to. How did you approach that?
Yeah, I've only done it twice in my films, and I've made 12 documentaries in the last 4 years. I think in this case, because it was just like one specific incident, I felt it was important to, I guess you would call this a docudrama then, when you hire actors, shoot a reenactment.
Well, you make it clear in the film, as you should, that what you're seeing is a reenactment. But
yeah, and I felt in this case it was necessary because it was that one quick moment, really a 10-minute segment. There was no video of that, actual video, so that's why I reenacted it. But the rest of the film is actual crime scene video, which is very rare to get. It's very rare that a police department will release that to anybody, let alone a filmmaker.
You interviewed victims and family within the film, as well as those who have been approaching this case for 24 years now on the detective side and the crime side. I'm curious, it was so traumatic for those. Was it difficult getting everyone to want to open up and talk about that day and that moment? Were you conflicted as a person versus a filmmaker of just how far to go with?
I would say, looking back now, only one person did not want to take part in the beginning, and I was able to talk her into it. That's Gloria Woods, who lost her 13-year-old daughter, Amy Hauser. But these interviews were very emotional. The crew was crying. I broke down, and it's hard to deliver an interview and ask questions when you have water in your eyes. And during the film, there are some parts, and I'm not sure if people will notice this, where there's some pauses, and that's because I can't even ask the next question. It's just so emotional for everyone involved in the room. And I think that humanizes everybody. I always tell people, it's okay to cry. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Men cry and they think, oh, I'm losing my masculinity. No, you're not. We all have feelings.
Yeah, the tough lead detective in this, 20 years on, I guess you shot a lot of this in 2009, 2010, almost 20 years after the fact, and he still tears up just thinking about it.
This devastated a whole city, a whole community, and Las Cruces will always have a scar over its city, unfortunately, whether this is solved or not, because if this thing does get solved, you can't bring the children back, you can't bring the adults back from that day.
The trauma of it comes through. I think it's one of the victims. It's really fascinating. It begins talking about what if they one day catch these two men and bring them to justice. And you could sense in her answer the conflict that, yes, obviously they want closure to this. They want those men found. But at the same time, there's a reluctance because they're afraid it will bring back even more powerfully that day, to have to confront those two
people. That was a very interesting answer, and I couldn't believe when I heard that, when she said, that was Audrey's sister, said, if this is going to bring back all those wounds, then I don't want them caught.
Right.
I almost had to stop myself, and did I hear that right? But I think at the end, everyone wants this thing solved.
Yeah. But I think one of the things the film imparts is just the damage that lingers after an event like this, even decades on. The ripples that cast out from that moment, and that these people are living with this day in and day out. The front half of the film, I guess, really deals with the event itself, the initial criminal investigation. But to your credit, the back half, I think, is really a document of the effect of violence on people's lives long term. And it's really powerful to see those witnesses talk about what they grapple with every day.
And my films are, I try to focus in on the victims. Mm. We tend to glorify the killers these days. And I often think about the victims. When we read about a horrific crime, we just think about the crime itself. But what about the victims? The devastating aftermath begins as soon as a family member is notified. And today, I think we should keep every killer out of the media and just call them Killer X. Hmm. And if we did that, perhaps we'd see less murders in our society.
It occurred to me watching your film, I've thought about this often watching documentaries, that some of the earliest films since the medium was invented were footage was documenting tragedy and bringing that to people and helping people experience what's going on in a different part of the world maybe or in someone else's life. And it certainly seems to be a theme of many of your films, which you've been on the show before to talk about Juarez and the films you've made about Juarez. But this notion of the effect of violence over time on the community that's left behind by the killers. And I'm wondering if going forward, that's just always been a drive for you to tell those stories and to explore the lingering effects of violence, or if that's just something you've come to as you get into these stories.
My passion is true crime, Charles, giving the victims a voice, representing them. I think victims get overlooked. I share their pain, and I think their stories need to be told. Unfortunately, we've had some horrible, as beautiful as the borderland is, we've had some horrific incidents. The Juarez tragedy, over 12,000 people murdered. The Las Cruces bowling alley murders. So I think coming to the borderland, I found two of the deepest stories you could possibly imagine, and I'm glad I'm able to represent the victims in all these films.
Your film towards the end begins to discuss, the fact that memories and time erodes our memories of things like this and maybe purposely, but that in the last few years, the families and victims really feel incumbent to get back out there and keep this story alive. And I guess that's partially what your film is doing. What do you hope to get out of these new screenings?
Justice for the families. Enough noise is made so that someone has a conscience and will come forward. I do believe someone listening to this show today knows what happened. Someone in El Paso County, Doña Ana County, is walking around with this. It's a matter of someone having the courage to step up to the plate and provide the information. You can give tips anonymously, mm-hmm. and that's really it, to get justice for the families. Let's get this thing solved. Now my dreams have turned into a press conference where this was solved, Charles. Mm. You see the cameras. You see more press you could imagine, victims, family members, law enforcement. And I think about the chief going up there making an initial statement, and you hear people wailing in the background. I think about that. That's my vision now. And when you vision something, I think you feel closer, like you're going to see it and it's going to happen. Those are my dreams now, that we get it to arrest for this.
Well, let's hope you have that epilogue and the victims have that epilogue soon, because that'd be a great way to wrap this story up. As always, it's good to have you back on the program, and thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
I've been discussing the 2010 documentary film A Nightmare in Las Cruces with director and producer Charlie Minn. The film chronicles one of New Mexico's worst violent crimes, the 1990 massacre at the Las Cruces Bowl bowling alley, in which four people were executed and three were wounded by two unknown assailants. A Nightmare in Las Cruces has been re-released and is in the midst of a one-week theatrical run at the Montwood 7 Theaters. The film is also available for rental and purchase through Amazon Video On Demand and is also available on DVD. If you or someone you know have any information regarding the Las Cruces Bowl case, please contact Las Cruces Crime Stoppers at 575-526-8000. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.